3. The Novellas. King's novellas are extraordinary. Here's a look at his collected novellas. 1. Different Seasons, 1978. Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption. This novella's subtitle is Hope Springs Eternal. This novella was adapted as the movie The Shawshank Redemption, written and directed by Frank Darabont. It has consistently been the highest-rated and most popular movie on the Internet Movie Database's top-rated movies list. Shawshank's character, Brooks Hatlin, was named in honor of King's former University of Maine English professor, Burton Hatlin. Hatlin has written many papers and articles about King's work, and King has acknowledged Hatlin's encouragement of his writing when he was attending UMO. One of Hatlin's articles about Stephen King's work is Why Stephen King is a Maine Writer, published in the online journal Joshua Maine. During a September 20th, 2000 live AOL chat, King said, I like a lot of the Castle Rock films, like Stand By Me, The Shawshank Redemption, and The Green Mile, because they see past the horror to the human beings. I'm a lot more interested in the people than the monsters. King fans have always loved this novella. Only The Mist and The Body topped it in a survey of hundreds of King fans conducted for my 2001 book, The Essential Stephen King. It is one of the four exemplary works in Different Seasons, perhaps King's finest novella collection. But as is often the case, Frank Darabont's The Shawshank Redemption, the 1994 movie version of the novella, brought a much larger audience to the source story and surprised a great many critics and readers who had fit Stephen King neatly into a horror-only box. This happened on a smaller scale with Rob Reiner's Stand By Me, but the film garnered nowhere near the response that greeted The Shawshank Redemption after the movie came out in 1994. King wrote Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption immediately after completing The Dead Zone. The intimate first-person narrative form, the well-defined characters, and the implicit tension and terror of the prison setting all combined to make this one of King's most engaging and beloved. In 1994, the film adaptation of Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption was released as The Shawshank Redemption. It starred Tim Robbins, Morgan Freeman, Bob Gunton, William Sadler, James Whitmore, David Provol, Jude Chicalella, and Paul McCrane. It was directed by Frank Darabont from his screenplay. Essential Stephen King Ranking, 29. Apt Pupil. This novella's subtitle is Summer of Corruption. Apt Pupil asks the question, how could the Nazis have done what they did? How could thousands of men, Nazi soldiers, report for duty every day and methodically and cold-bloodedly exterminate human beings, including women and young children, as though they were nothing more than cattle slated for slaughtering that particular workday? Todd Bowden, a 13-year-old all-American kid obsessed with the Holocaust, discovers a horrible truth about one of his neighbors, an old man named Arthur Denker. Denker is really Kurt Dusander, a Nazi death camp commandant now known around the world as the Blood Fiend of Patton. In a June 1983 interview with Playboy magazine, Stephen King was asked if he had an obsession with mass murderer Charles Starkweather and the nature of evil. He said, "Obsession is too strong a word. It was more like trying to figure out a puzzle because I wanted to know why somebody could do the things Starkweather did. I suppose I wanted to decipher the unspeakable, just as people try to make sense out of Auschwitz or Jonestown. I certainly didn't find evil seductive in any sick way. That would be pathological. But I did find it compelling, and I think most people do, or the bookstores wouldn't still be filled with biographies of Adolf Hitler more than 35 years after World War II. The fascination of the abomination, as Conrad called it." Stephen King wrote Apt Pupil in 2 weeks after finishing writing The Shining. These two incredibly intense works so wiped out King that he did not write another word for 3 whole months. "I was pooped," he has admitted. In 1998, the film Apt Pupil was released starring Brad Renfro, Ian McKellen, and David Schwimmer. It was directed by Bryan Singer from a screenplay by Brandon Boyce. Essential Stephen King Ranking, 30. The Body. This novella's subtitle is Fall from Innocence. The Body is another of Stephen King's works that shuts people up when they attempt to dismiss him as just a horror writer. Rita Hayworth in Shawshank Redemption and The Last Rung on the Ladder do the same thing, in equally as effective a manner. But as is often the case when a movie adaptation of a King work becomes an enormous hit, sometimes the original work is overshadowed. In the case of the novella The Body, Rob Reiner's enormously popular 1986 movie version, Stand By Me, has effectively usurped the text version in the annals of popular culture and is the work that has the higher profile presence. In fact, I have heard people refer to the novella itself as Stand By Me. The Body is set in Castle Rock, Maine. Maine landmarks and characters abound, including Cujo, Constable Bannerman, Harrison State Park, the Mellow Tiger, the Castle Rock Call, the newspaper in which Gary from The Man in the Black Suit published a weekly column for years, Lewiston, Motton, Pownall, and more. In Danse Macabre, King talks about the genesis of The Body. "According to Mom, I had gone off to play at a neighbor's house, a house that was near a railroad line. About an hour after I left, I came back," she said, "as white as a ghost. I would not speak for the rest of the day. I would not tell her why I'd not waited to be picked up or phoned that I wanted to come home. I would not tell her why my chum's mom hadn't walked me back, but had allowed me to come alone. It turned out that the kid I had been playing with had been run over by a freight train while playing on or crossing the tracks. My mom never knew if I had been near him when it happened. There are two brothers mentioned in The Body, with the last name of Darabont, Stevie and Royce. The Body was published in 1982. Stephen King had known Shawshank Redemption director Frank Darabont since 1980, when he sold Frank the rights for a dollar to make a short film of King's night shift story, The Woman in the Room. As a result, it seems likely that these two characters' moniker is a nod to the esteemed director. In 1986, the film adaptation of The Body was released as the movie Stand By Me. It starred Will Wheaton, Richard Dreyfuss, River Phoenix, Corey Feldman, Jerry O'Connell, Kiefer Sutherland, and Casey Shemasko. It was directed by Rob Reiner from a screenplay by Reynold Gideon and Bruce A. Evans. The movie Stand By Me is ranked at number 193 on IMDb.com's list of top-rated movies. Essential Stephen King ranking, 27. The Breathing Method. This novella's subtitle is A Winter's Tale. In an interview in the June 1983 issue of Playboy magazine, King talked about this novella. In my novella, The Breathing Method, in different seasons, I've created a mysterious private club in an old brownstone on East 35th Street in Manhattan, in which an oddly matched group of men gathers periodically to trade tales of the uncanny. That men's club really is a metaphor for the entire storytelling process. There are so many stories in me as there are rooms in that house, and I can easily lose myself in them. One of the most interesting bits of true cultural trivia King inserts into this story is his recounting of an accepted practice in 1935 of encouraging overweight expectant mothers to, incredibly, take up smoking. A popular advertising slogan of the time was, "Reach for a Lucky instead of a Sweet." The Breathing Method is dedicated to Peter and Susan Straub and may have been directly inspired by Straub's Chowder Society Men's Club and Ghost Story. Regardless of its genesis, though, for all its horror and its gruesome conclusion, this is one of King's literary works, told in a leisurely tone, yet not lacking punch or pleasure. In addition to being a compelling and horrifying Christmas tale having nothing to do with Christmas, except that a birth takes place on Christmas Eve, The Breathing Method is notable for being the first time King used his totemic phrase, "It is the tale, not he who tells it." In the Stephen King universe, authors Stanley Wiater, Christopher Golden, and Hank Wagner wrote in 2001, "It is telling to note that thus far, The Breathing Method is the one piece in this collection that has not been filmed, nor is it likely to be, given the hideousness of the conclusion." I'd like to add that when one considers the anthology in which this novella appears, the continued reluctance of filmmakers to adapt The Breathing Method for the silver screen is a powerful statement about its genuinely horrific ending. After all, Different Seasons has already provided filmmakers with source material for three exceptional films: Rob Reiner's Stand By Me, The Body, Frank Darabont's The Shawshank Redemption, Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption, and Bryan Singer's Apt Pupil, Apt Pupil. 2018 update. IMDb.com has a film called The Breathing Method listed as in development with no further details. Essential Stephen King ranking, 75. 2. Four Past Midnight, 1990. The Langoliers. This novella's first publication was in Four Past Midnight. 10 passengers on a plane awaken to find everyone else has disappeared, including the pilot and co-pilot. They land in an alternate Bangor, Maine, and learn that there are creatures called Langoliers whose job it is to eat the past. In The Langoliers, it is said that Albert Kausner plays a Gretsch, G-R-E-T-C-H, violin. I think this might have been a misspelling of Gretsch, G-R-E-T-S-C-H, a renowned maker of stringed instruments. In a September 7, 2017 interview with the New York Times, Stephen King said this about flying versus driving. "I travel by plane when I have to. I travel by car when I possibly can. The difference is, if your car breaks down, you pull over into a breakdown lane. If you're at 40,000 feet and your plane has trouble, you die. I feel more in control when I'm driving than when I'm flying. You hope that the pilot won't have a brain embolism and die at the controls." In an April 3, 1998 interview with Dennis Miller on HBO, King talked about the genesis of The Langoliers. "I kept thinking that it would be great if you could knock yourself out while you were flying. That would be the ideal. So I was flying with some guys who had a small jet, and I said, this would be really great if only you didn't have to be aware through the whole thing. If you could just get on and there'd be a black place in your mind. And the guy says to me, well, we can lower the oxygen back there and you'd go right out. And I said, do it. And they wouldn't do it. But I got a story out of it." The TV miniseries Stephen King's The Langoliers aired on ABC in 1995. It starred Patricia Wettig, Bronson Pinchot, Dean Stockwell, Kate Maberly, David Morse, Mark Lindsay Chapman, Chris Collette, Kimber Riddle, and Frankie Faison. It was directed by Tom Holland from Holland's own screenplay. Secret Window, Secret Garden. This novella's first publication was in Four Past Midnight. Secret Window, Secret Garden is a powerful and scary story that, like the equally effective The Dark Half, Misery, and Bag of Bones, takes us inside the mind of a best-selling author and makes us realize that, sometimes, that's a pretty spooky place. King is very good when writing about writers and the writing process. Secret Window, Secret Garden is no exception to that rule. King's 1989 novel, The Dark Half, and this 1990 novella are both about writers and the power that fiction can have over both the writer and the reader. Written around the same time, they are evocative and probing looks into the psyche of the writer/artist, but they also share something else in common. They are both works in which King mentions assassinated Beatle John Lennon by name. In The Dark Half, Liz Beaumont hopes that the people now paying attention to her newly famous husband are not like the mad crocodile hunter who killed John Lennon. In Secret Window, Secret Garden, Mort Rainey describes John Shooter as wearing round wire-framed John Lennon glasses. In 1980, a few days after Lennon was killed, King published a eulogy for the slain Beatle called Remembering John. This is one of King's most psychologically astute tales, and the final revelation, spoiler alert, of who John Shooter actually was and how he was connected to Mort Rainey is, in my mind, one of the most satisfying and terrifying denouements in a King story. And who was John Kintner, and how did he figure into all this? Secret Window, Secret Garden was released as the film Secret Window in 2004. It starred Johnny Depp, John Turturro, Maria Bello, and Timothy Hutton. It was directed by David Cope from his own screenplay adaptation of the novella. Essential Stephen King ranking, 38. The Library Policeman. This novella's first publication was in Four Past Midnight. King's inspiration for this tale came from his then 10-year-old son, Owen, who told his father he was afraid to return overdue books to the library because of the library police. In Three Past Midnight, King's forenote to The Library Policeman, he writes, "About 30 pages in, the humor began to go out of the situation. And about 50 pages in, the whole story took a screaming left turn into the dark places I have traveled so often and which I still know so little about. Eventually, I found the guy I was looking for and managed to raise my head enough to look into his merciless silver eyes. I have tried to bring back a sketch of him for you, constant reader, but it may not be very good. My hands were trembling quite badly when I made it, you see." In 2001, the Book of the Month Club published a hardcover reader's calendar that contained all kinds of information about writers and books. The BOMC reprinted part of the How King Kills section from my complete Stephen King encyclopedia, and they made sure to include my entry for The Library Policeman, which read, "Killed by a funnel-snouted, eye-sucking, shape-changing alien librarian." The Library Policeman is one of those occasional works of King in which he refers to himself in the third person. Others include Thinner, The Blue Air Compressor, and The Night Flyer. In the story, Junction City librarian Ardelia Lortz makes it quite plain to Sam Peebles that she is no fan of King's books. "I have no desire to read a novel by Robert McCammon, Stephen King, or V.C. Andrews." Ardelia also tells Sam that Robert McCammon's novel, Swan Song, is the favorite novel of her children patrons. She even had a copy put in Vinnabind. Currently, there are no film adaptations of this novella. Essential Stephen King ranking, 34. The Sun Dog. This novella's first publication was in Four Past Midnight. In the forenote to The Sun Dog, King said, "This story came almost all at once one night in the summer of 1987, but the thinking which made it possible went on for almost a year. Kevin Delavan, a teenage Castle Rock, Maine resident, receives a self-developing Polaroid Sun camera for his 15th birthday. He is thrilled with the gift, except that after he snaps his first picture, he realizes that his Sun camera is no ordinary Sun camera. No matter what Kevin looks at through the viewfinder, what develops is a photo of a black dog in front of a white fence. What is most perplexing to both Kevin and his dad, though, is that with each snapshot Kevin takes, the Sun Dog appears to be getting closer and closer to the viewer. Stephen King's longtime editor, Chuck Verrill, has been honored several times in King's work by King naming characters after him. The most prominent mention would be the Creepshow segment, The Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill. There is also a character named Verrill, a literary agent, in Umney's Last Case, and the Verrill name pops up again here in The Sun Dog. In this Four Past Midnight novella, Elisippus Deer's sister, Melisippus, was once married to a gentleman named Verrill. Mr. Verrill was killed in the Battle of Leyte Gulf in 1944. Essential Stephen King ranking, 37. 3. Hearts in Atlantis, 1999. In his author's note in Hearts in Atlantis, King said, "Although it is difficult to believe, the 60s are not fictional. They actually happened. I've tried to remain true to the spirit of the age. Is that really possible? I don't know, but I've tried." In 2001, the film Hearts in Atlantis was released starring Anthony Hopkins and Anton Yelchin. It was written by William Goldman and directed by Scott Hicks. Although the film used the title of the book, the movie was based on the novella Low Men in Yellow Coats and parts of Heavenly Shades of Night Are Falling from the collection. Low Men in Yellow Coats. This novella is a dark tower story. When Bobby Garfield is 11 years old, a man named Ted Brodigan moves into the boarding house where Bobby lives with his widowed mother. Bobby and Ted soon establish a friendship and a bond, and Bobby eventually learns that Ted is on the lam. Not from the cops, however, but from the low men in yellow coats, minions of the Crimson King, whom we already know from the Dark Tower series and Insomnia. Why do the low men want Ted? Because he is a breaker, a being who can break the beams that lead to the Dark Tower, and the Crimson King wants to use him, against his will, to destroy the beams and, thus, make the Dark Tower fall and destroy all of space and time. Ted is captured, however, due in part to Bobby's rejection, chickening out, of him. Bobby's guilt sets him on the wrong path for many years of his life, until he receives an envelope from Ted, who has apparently escaped the Crimson King, filled with rose petals, a resonant and recognizable image to readers familiar with the Dark Tower narrative. Hearts in Atlantis, a story about University of Maine freshman Pete Riley, who gets caught up in a dangerous obsession with the card game Hearts. And this obsession was literally dangerous. The hellhole of Vietnam awaited flunked-out college students. Pete also gets romantically involved with none other than Carol Gerber, now an anti-war activist who was once rescued by Bobby from low men in yellow coats when they were young and who will tragically die, or will she, in a fire. King talks about playing endless card games when he was a student at the University of Maine in his Hearts in Suspension essay. 5-1, 1-5. See that section in this volume. Blind Willie. Blind Willie connects the first two stories in the anthology through the character of Willie Shearman, one of the kids who violently assaulted Carol Gerber in Low Men in Yellow Coats, and who has never been able to emotionally atone for his sins. This story was originally published in Antaeus, the final issue in October 1994, and later appeared with minor revisions in 1997 in King's Filtrum Press anthology, Six Stories. The version in Hearts in Atlantis is heavily revised from its first two publications. Why We're in Vietnam. This story is about John Sully John Sullivan, a friend of Bobby's from Low Men in Yellow Coats, and a Vietnam vet whose life was saved by the previous story's Willie Shearman. This tale boasts one of the most powerful scenes in the book, a terrifying sequence in which things fall from the sky onto the highway where Sully John sits in traffic. This scene is really a depiction of Sullivan's death that ends on an exquisitely poignant and undeniably supernatural moment involving, of all things, a baseball glove and another message from Ted Brodigan. A section of this short story was originally published by King's Filtrum Press as a chapbook called The New Lieutenant's Rap, which was given to party guests at an April 6, 1999 celebration in New York City, marking King's 25th year in publishing. This segment was heavily revised for its eventual appearance in Hearts in Atlantis. Heavenly Shades of Night Are Falling. Hearts in Atlantis concludes with the brief story, Heavenly Shades of Night Are Falling, which was added to the book after the manuscript had been turned into the publisher. In this story, Bobby learns a truth about Carol Gerber and Ted Brodigan, and ultimately, himself. This story makes yet another Dark Tower connection when we learn that Raymond Fiegler, the leader of the group that did the bombing in which Carol was killed, taught Carol a trick. He taught her how to become dim, an Eyes of the Dragon reference, which means that Fiegler, another RF character, is probably yet another manifestation of our old friend Randall Flagg. Essential Stephen King ranking, 14. 4. Full Dark, No Stars, 2010. 1922. Wilfred's wife wants to sell land she owns, and if she does, it will render Wilfred's adjacent land unfarmable. Because it's a Stephen King story, murder, a well, a dead cow, murderous robberies, and rats, lots of rats, become integral parts of Wilfred's story. A film version of 1922 aired on Netflix in October 2017. It was written and directed by Zach Hilditch and starred Thomas Jane and Molly Parker. Jane also starred in The Mist and Dreamcatcher. 1922 takes place in Hemmingford Home, Nebraska, where Mother Abigail lives. Big Driver. Tess, a mystery writer on her way home from a signing appearance, is given advice to avoid I-84 and take a lesser-known road home. But she is actually being steered to a place where she'll be stranded and experience a nightmare beyond anything she's ever written. Is murder as revenge ever justified? Big Driver explores this question, and Tess Thorne makes life-changing decisions after her tragic experience. The Lifetime film Big Driver was released in 2014. It starred Maria Bello, Ann Dowd, Olympia Dukakis, and Joan Jett, was written by Richard Christian Matheson, and was directed by Mikhail Solomon. Fair Extension. What if the devil offered you a deal? Dave Streeter is told that his cancer will be cured, he will live at least another 15 years, and he will prosper. But he has to pay 15% of his salary for those 15 years, and he has to choose someone upon whom will be levied terrible misfortune. Would you do it? Spoiler alert, Dave takes the deal. Fair Extension is set in Derry, Maine, a Mrs. Denbrough is mentioned. We all know what goes on in Derry, but now we learn that not only is Derry the home turf of Pennywise, but apparently Satan as well. Does Dave ultimately pay for surrendering to the dark side, or is he left at the end of the novella wanting more? A good marriage. The marriage in a good marriage is anything but for years it manifested the trappings of one. What would you do if you discovered your husband was a serial killer? That is the premise of this novella. King said that the bad guy in a good marriage is based on the true story of Dennis Rader, the ordinary father and husband and all-around good citizen who had a secret life as the bind, torture, kill, BTK killer, who murdered 10 people between 1974 and 1991 in and around Wichita, Kansas. Rader is currently serving 10 consecutive life sentences in Kansas. In 2014, upon the release of the movie adaptation of A Good Marriage, written by Stephen King, Dennis Rader's daughter, Carrie Rawson, publicly denounced King and the movie and accused King of exploiting her father's 10 victims and their families. King responded that Bob Anderson, the killer in his story, is a banal little man and that the novella is actually about a strong woman, his wife Darcy. He also said that the drive to understand is the basis for art, and that is what he strove for in this novella and movie. A Good Marriage stars Joan Allen, Anthony LaPaglia, Kristen Connolly, and Stephen Lang. 5. Gwendy's Button Box with Richard Schismar. There are three ways up to Castleview from the town of Castle Rock, Route 117, Pleasant Road, and the Suicide Stairs. Richard Schismar is a writer and the founder of the magazine and publishing house Cemetery Dance. In an interview with King and Schismar on the Cemetery Dance website, King says, "I had the idea for the story last July and thought it was a little like Richard Matheson's Button Button, but could be its own special thing. I liked it because it basically postulates putting the fate of the world in the hands of a child, like Trump. I didn't know how to finish it, so it just sat there until this January. I didn't seek out a collaborator. One kind of fell into my lap. I've corresponded via email with Rich Schismar for years. I sent him Gwendy and basically said, do what you want or it will stay unfinished. Working with Rich was very easy. For one thing, he knows my stuff, backward and forward, probably better than I do. I didn't give him any direction, that I remember. Just let him run with the ball. He did a terrific job of bringing it home. My confidence in him came from reading his short fiction, and he's good with suburban family life. Terrific, actually. Very loving, which gives the scary stuff extra bite. He wrote the middle and the end. I did some work on the end, expanding it, and there it was. Tout finis. Gwendy's Button Box was a New York Times bestseller. 6. Elevation. Although Scott Carey doesn't look any different, he's been steadily losing weight. There are a couple of other odd things, too. He weighs the same in his clothes and out of them, no matter how heavy they are. This novella was announced by King in a December 22, 2017 interview with Entertainment Weekly magazine. King said, "Elevation is also a Castle Rock story, and in some ways, it's almost like a sequel to Gwendy. Sometimes you seed the ground, and you get a little fertilizer, and things turn out." Bev Vincent on Elevation. Special thanks to Bev for his review of King's latest novella. Although Castle Rock was supposedly destroyed at the end of Needful Things, the small western Maine town is still doing fairly well, especially during tourist season. King's version is faring considerably better than its counterpart on the recent Hulu series of the same name. Characters have visited Castle Rock in subsequent books, and King returned to it in earnest in Gwendy's Button Box, co-written with Richard Schismar. Inexplicable things are still happening there, though. King's new novella, Elevation, tells the story of Scott Carey, named after the lead in Matheson's The Shrinking Man, a divorced web designer who discovers he's rapidly losing weight. The weird aspect is that he weighs the same naked as when fully dressed with pockets full of coins. He also still looks mildly overweight. Gravity simply appears to be losing its grip on him. His doctor friend wants him to see a specialist, but Scott doesn't want to spend the rest of his life being poked and prodded. He embraces the impossibility of his situation. He feels oddly elevated. Castle Rock stories are not known for being optimistic and inspirational, but Elevation has the same positive feel as Rita Hayworth in Shawshank Redemption. The novella blends elements of Christine, with its odometer counting down toward zero, Thinner, although that was a Bachman novel and those never end well, and Pixar's animated movie Up, yet it's vastly different from all of these. The supernatural element aside, the story is about Scott becoming woke. His new neighbors are Deirdre McComb and Missy Donaldson, a married couple who own a vegetarian Mexican restaurant called Holy Frijole. They're having a rough time because Castle Rock is ultra-conservative, and many of its residents resent the couple's insistence on emphasizing the married part. The restaurant seems doomed. Scott's conflict with them has nothing to do with their sexuality. He just wants them to keep their dogs from crapping in his yard. His determination to win them over and become at least good neighbors pushes him to confront his town's prejudices head-on. The centerpiece of this novella is the Castle Rock Turkey Trot, an annual 12K fundraiser. Scott decides to use his affliction to his advantage to try to break down the social barriers in his longtime hometown and mend fences with his neighbors. Elevation is uplifting, pun only partly intended, touching, charming, and melancholy. Easily the most optimistic tale King has ever written.